Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up on the program, Malawians head to the polls on Tuesday to elect their new leaders for the next 5 years, with President Joyce Banda sending this message to the voters.
I came in and I decided that I had to choose between my career and my people, and I chose the people of Malawi. Even if I lose the election, somebody who comes will have to heed the call of Malawians that enough is enough.
A car bomb explodes in a Christian neighborhood of Nigeria's second most populous and mainly Muslim city of Kano.
As a result of the blast, 5 persons were confirmed dead. One of them, the suspected suicide bomber himself.
These stories and more to come in this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Malawians will go to the polls on Tuesday for the first ever tripartite elections, meaning that it is the first time the people of Malawi will vote for their local government, members of parliament and president in a single election. With 12 candidates vying for the top office, President Joyce Banda's seat of power is under threat by two other main contenders, that is Peter Mutharika from the Progressive People's Party and Lazarus Chakwera from Malawi's Congress Party. In this report by Daniel Pales and now presented by Sela Oneko, we hear what's at stake for Joyce Banda.
President Joyce Banda is under pressure. She wants to win the presidential race against 11 opposition candidates. And according to Jimmy Kinder, a political analyst from the University of Malawi, Banda's popularity has dropped since she first took office.
If Malawians voted, they may be 6 months after Joyce Banda became a president, she would have won landslide. But today, the situation is slightly different.
Banda came into power in 2012 when her predecessor, Binkua Mutharika, died of a heart attack. In his last few years, Mutharika was viewed as increasingly authoritarian and Malawi's economy had taken a strong blow. As the second woman to lead an African country, both Malawians and the international community placed their hopes in the new president. At the beginning, she took all the right steps. She fired the head of police, who was seen as responsible for the death of 19 protesters. She also made attempts to heal the soured relationship between Malawi and its Western donors. Yet 2 years down the line, opposition candidates like Helen Singh from the United Independent Party claim that little has changed for Malawians.
The poverty levels in Malawi are very deep and very painful. But this nation is very rich. And the rich resources of this nation are not used for the development and the bringing up the level of life in this country.
What many Malawians really hold against their president is a corruption scandal. The Cashgate affair came to light in September 2013. Corrupt officials had pocketed $30 million within a period of 6 months. Yet Banda downplayed the scandal. She only reacted a month later under rising international pressure. Political analyst Jimmy Kainja recalls.
I remember us going on the streets protesting about that guy continuing as a minister because the same guy who was a minister under Mutharika, so I had messed up a lot. So she was forced to reshuffle her cabinet. And that's the most maybe effective thing that she could have done, but everybody knew that she did it reluctantly. She didn't want even to do it.
Malawi's opposition and civil society are not the only ones who have lost faith in Joyce Banda. In April this year, Germany froze its budgetary aid to Malawi due to the poor management of public funds. Banda was also criticized for her management of the country's agriculture. Many analysts believe that Joyce Banda is still headed for a win in Tuesday's elections. The opposition is seen as weak and divided, and an outright majority is all she needs to win.
Sela Oneko presented that report by Daniel Peltz. Now, the Malawi Electoral Commission has cautioned that opinion pollsters in Malawi often have questionable credentials. But I spoke to Mario Aquila, an expert on Malawi based in Scotland, and he starts by telling us how he sees Banda's chances of winning the presidency and her shortcomings.
According to the latest polls, she is ahead of the game, but she is very close to Peter Mutharika, who is running at the moment second. But President Banda has, of course, behind her the Cashgate, which has been the great financial scandal. And therefore, I have the feeling that particularly professional Malawians and educated Malawians would actually change the support because she represents a different party than what she belonged to when she was elected and so on.
Could this be a turning point for Malawi to regain its image abroad that has been tarnished by the corruption scandal that you mentioned about?
I think it could be. My sense is that because of the corruption scandal, Malawi will have to pull some kind of explanation. My own sense is that if there will be one party that will be able to regain some voting, is of course the Malawi Congress Party. It has been on the background for 20 years because, of course, of the old President Banda. It has been battered by accusations of human rights and other things. But this is a very tight election. But I have the feeling that whoever wins will have to very quickly to look for the support of the others in order to show to international donors that Malawi is worth the international help and the support.
Now, how important is this election to the ordinary Malawians?
I think it's more important than the previous one. Why? Because there have been enough protests, and now with the introduction of internet and mobile phones and social media, I think most Malawians will be aware that their taxes and other things have been fiddled with. So in the previous election, the president had the advantage of saying Malawi is going through, Malawi is a modern country and an example to the donors and others. That was tinted by the discussion on homosexuality and then, of course, by the difficulties of the cash gate. And so I think the turnout will be very good and Malawians will feel that it's a very important moment for them.
I was speaking to Mario Aquila, an expert on Malawi based in Scotland.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
A car bomb exploded in a Christian neighborhood of Nigeria's second most populous and mainly Muslim city of Kano, killing five people. Previous explosions in Kano and elsewhere have been blamed on the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram. Meanwhile, African leaders meeting in Paris over the weekend agreed to wage war on the Islamic militants. The leaders from Nigeria, Cameroon, Benin, Chad and Niger pledged to share intelligence and coordinate action against the group. DW's Ubale Musa from the Hausa Service spoke to Bello Sabo Abdulkadir, the Secretary of Northeast Elders Forum, on the resolutions at the Paris meeting.
It is a very welcome development in as much as it is going to bring sanity, peace and tranquility within the region. The truth of the matter is the joint effort between these countries will go a long way in curtailing the activities of insurgency within the region. Because Nigeria is not an isolated country within the region. Whatever affects Nigeria, affects Cameroon, affects Chad, and it affects Niger Republic. Just a couple of days ago, there were abductions and killings within the Cameroonian borders. The same thing have been happening in Niger Republic. And these are routes whereby these insurgents find succor because they can attack Nigeria and run into Chad or Cameroon and hide. But with this joint effort, you are creating a situation where there is no safe haven environment for them.
How far do you think the joint effort can go, more especially some see in the Nigerian army as the regional leader, why Nigerians failed to arrest the situation? Do you think simply because the Chadians, the Cameroonians, and Nigerians decided to say, yes, we are going to assist, we are going to cooperate with you, Boko Haram will come to an end?
Of all these countries mentioned, there are no experienced military personnel that have had so many contacts in this kind of activities than the Nigerian army. I agree with the reasoning that the Nigerian army had failed at home, but had anybody bothered to find out why they failed? It's not enough to tell the army to go to Sambisa or go to Borno or Yobe or Damaturu and fight. Have you provided the requisite material for him to perform? These are the questions we should be asking ourselves.
And now you are going to give an opportunity to see whether Nigerian government, in collaboration with the other three countries, are going to work assiduously to bring an end to Boko Haram.
The issue of criticism arose because of the manner and approach the government handled the issue. Because in as much as the government does not stop living in the lie, whether this thing is really an insurgency or a political, whatever, from their political opponents. As long as the government stop believing in that, I think we are making a headway, and definitely they will succeed.
That was Bello Sabo Abdulkadir, the Secretary of Northeast Elders Forum, speaking to DW's Ubale Musa from the Hausa Department. Over 2,500 business personalities from Africa and beyond have gathered in Kigali, Rwanda, to launch the 2014 Africa Economic Outlook Report. The report says African economies will grow significantly if they focus intensely on production of goods for local consumption. Later in the week, African heads of state are also expected to jet in Kigali to discuss Africa's economic future. The report was published by the African Development Bank, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP. From Kigali, Flora Kaitesi tells us more about its contents.
According to the 2014 Africa Economic Outlook, the continent's growth is projected to grow at a rate of 4.8% in 2014 and 5-6% in 2015. This means that the continent's economic growth is now driven by demand for domestic products, infrastructure, and increased internal trade in manufactured goods. The African Economic Outlook also shows that there has been remarkable progress in human development, with lower poverty levels, rising incomes, and improving rates of school enrollment and health coverage. But Professor Mthuli Nkube, the chief economist and vice president of the Africa Development Bank Group, believes that although the fastest growth is now being detected in poorer African countries, sustainability remains a serious factor.
Growth is not confined to middle-income or high-income countries, at least in terms of some kind of African classification. Actually, it is the poorest countries that are showing the strongest growth. They're able to demonstrate that they too can grow, and this is encouraging. It means perhaps that this growth is sustainable, but we know that fundamentally we need to deal with structural transformation, make it more inclusive, take advantage of opportunities such as global value chains to really sustain it so that it impacts on the broader population and creates opportunity for all.
Africa is known to have vast natural resources, a powerful labor force and an agriculture sector which can propel the continent's economy. But even with these resources, Mario Pezzini, the director of the OECD Development Center, believes that African countries are still seriously affected by issues of transport which stand in the way of tapping global markets.
Because in many cases we are talking about trade, but things about logistics. It is fundamental in Africa, a continent that is not only but largely producing commodities, where the price of transport count a lot, as the value added per kilo is low. It's a country producing fresh goods that you have to deliver fast. It's a continent that is close to the biggest market in the world, but again, this market is asking for just-in-time delivery. Therefore, there are many things to be done.
The United Nations Development Programme, however, warned that this growth is drastically affected by shocks such as conflict and political fragility. The Africa Economic Outlook was launched as part of the Africa Development Bank's annual meetings that are underway in Kigali.
Flora Kaitesi reporting from Kigali.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the fourth episode of our ongoing radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda said goodbye to her homeland and set off on her way to Europe to continue her studies. On the plane, she met Florence, and the two seemed to make friends straight away. Elsewhere, Farahani, a would-be illegal migrant to Europe, bumped into his friend Sule in a cyber cafe. This was after he was too late to catch the van driven by the traffickers, who would have taken them from their hometown and smuggled them to Europe. So where will the story take us next? Well, don't go anywhere, because we are about to find out. Today's episode is called Lost in a Foreign Land. We start off with Farahani and Sule in the cyber cafe. Farahani is chatting online with Muhammad, a friend of his who's reached Europe and is seeking asylum there.
Farahani, who are you talking to online? I've been waiting for you for more than an hour now.
Oh, one second, Mohammed. I'll be right back.
What is it with you, Sule?
Can't you see that I'm busy? I told you to wait for me.
That's precisely what I've been doing for a very long time. Who are you talking to? Hmm? An internet girlfriend?
Oh, don't be silly. It's a friend of mine. He made it to Europe. Now he's seeking asylum there, and he's telling me how much his life has changed.
His life has changed? Mm. How? For better or worse?
Oh, better, of course. Now, look, go and wait for me. I won't be long now. I'm losing time talking to you. The meter is running. Okay, go on now.
Okay, fine.
Mohammed, sorry about that. So, you were saying that after the coast guards found you on the boat, they escorted you to the island? Then what?
They gave us blankets and food, and our doctor came and examined us. Some people were dehydrated and some were sick.
So you were well looked after?
Yeah, it's Europe. What did you expect?
Ah, do you know when the next boat will be leaving?
No, but I'll text you as soon as I hear anything. Well, I have to go back to the hostel now.
Oh, man, I really envy you. You're living my dream. Thanks, Mohammed. Please keep in touch. Bye.
Farahani envies his friend who is now living in Europe and seeking asylum. So what does being an asylum seeker mean? Keep listening. We'll be finding out more about that later on. Meanwhile, very early the next morning, Linda lands safely at a transit airport somewhere in Europe, where she has to catch another flight to her final destination. Let's follow her and see how she handles it.
Oh my God! This airport is so big and so busy. Oh no, I only have 40 minutes to catch my connecting flight. Ah, I'll ask this lady what to do. Excuse me, madam. Good morning. Do you know where I...
Sorry, I have to catch my plane.
I don't believe it. She didn't even wait for me to finish my question. Ah, maybe I should try that man sitting over there with a newspaper. Hello, excuse me. I'm trying to find my gate number.
I have no idea. It's my first time here.
Wow. What a welcome. People are so busy with their own problems here. The information desk, thank God. Hello? Could you tell me how to get to gate number 5, please?
You have to follow the signs, young lady. Everything is clearly written on the signs. Go straight ahead, turn right, exit the building, go to the second terminal, and then take the elevator to the departure building. Sorry. Then you have to go through the security check, and from there you can proceed to gate number 5.
Wait.
Thank you, and have a nice flight.
What did he say again? Security check? Oh, no. Then I have less time than I thought.
Linda rushes off in the direction she's been told to go in, feeling nervous, worried, and stressed. The rude responses of those two unfriendly passengers were not at all what she was used to back home. But for Linda, this is only the beginning. Meanwhile, back in North Africa, Farahani has come up with a cheaper way to get him and Sule into Europe. He's about to share it with Sule as they walk together along the beach.
Listen, Sule. I was thinking that maybe we should try and cross the sea in your father's boat. You know, that way we won't have to pay those smugglers. They charge so much money.
What? That's a really good idea. And just how do you suggest to do that? Come on, Farahani, be serious.
I'm completely serious. I think that as you're the son of a fisherman, you must know a bit about boats and the sea.
You really are serious.
Ah.
I thought you must be joking. Farahani, yes, my father is a fisherman. But that doesn't mean anything. We can't just sail to Europe all by ourselves in a little rowing boat. We'd never make it.
Oh, Sule, two migrants in a small boat have a better chance of making it to Europe than 20 or 50 migrants in a bigger one.
No way. You're really not thinking of...
Yes, I am, Sule. We have a possibility that most other people don't. Let's take it and go for it.
But what about my father? Our family have been fishermen for generations. I can't just steal his boat. It's his livelihood. He'd curse me for the rest of my life.
Who said anything about stealing? Listen, you go to him and tell him about our plan. I'm sure he'll be happy to lend us the boat. Any father would be delighted to hear that his son is looking for ways to better himself. And if we succeed, your family are the ones who'd benefit the most.
All this dreaming about Europe has made you go crazy, Farahani. Do you have any idea what kind of man my father is? No, I won't do it. If you want to go ahead with your plan, you'll have to face him alone.
Ah, Sule, when will you ever grow up and be a man? Every day we see hundreds of people pass through our town on their way to Europe. If they can do it, why can't we? Besides, I've already told you that I have some good contacts there. If we can just get there, we'll be fine.
Farahani, this all sounds very good and tempting. But there are so many questions. What if we drown? What if we are attacked by sharks? Or what if the waves are too strong and drive us off course? We may not get to Europe. We might end up on another continent entirely. And that's just the journey. We have no idea what awaits us if we are actually there.
What's the difference whether we end up in Europe or America? The important thing is to get away from this poverty-stricken continent of ours.
Hey, you talk like a politician, Farahani. Maybe you should become one.
Never. Our politicians and leaders are the ones who've destroyed our country. They do nothing but fill their own stomachs and sell off our natural resources. And once they get into power, they refuse to leave. They'll use any way they can, including brutality and torture, just to cling onto that power.
To be honest, I never thought you were so passionate about our country. All you ever talk about is Europe, Europe, Europe.
That's because there's nothing good to say about our country. But listen, back to what we were talking about before. You like the idea?
Well, it's dangerous, Farahani. But yes, all right. It will be a great adventure.
Ah, wonderful. Now, all we need is speak to your father. And the earlier, the better.
Farahani has finally convinced Sule that they should risk their lives by rowing themselves all the way to Europe in Sule's father's small carved wooden fishing boat. How will Sule's father react? We'll soon find out. Meanwhile, at the airport, Linda is still trying to get to her departure gate, but she's stuck in a long queue at security. Suddenly...
Miss Linda Maraga, please proceed immediately to departure gate number 5. You are delaying the flight. All other passengers are now on board.
That's me, that's me. Excuse me. Excuse me, please. May I jump the queue?
No, you can't.
My flight is about to depart.
So what?
Security, young lady, please remove your belt, watch, and any metal objects. May I see your travel documents?
Sir, I really need to catch my flight. They just called out my name on the speakers.
Do you have a laptop or any liquid in your hand luggage?
No.
Any sharp objects?
No, please, I need to hurry. I'm going to miss my flight.
Keep your voice down, young lady. Now, walk through that metal detector.
Okay, fine.
Oh no, Linda set off the metal detector. Will she still manage to get to her flight in time? You'll have to wait until the next episode to find out, as we've reached the end of today's installment of our radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. What other challenges will Linda have to face as she makes her way to her European university? Will Farahani and Sule be able to persuade Sule's father to lend them his boat? All this and more is coming up in episode 5. Meanwhile, please join us on facebook.com/DW.LBE to talk about African migrants' first experiences and impressions of Europe. And if you'd like to listen to this episode again, you can just log on to the website dw.de/DestinationEurope. Until next time, goodbye.
And before we leave you, here's a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. Malawians go to the polls on Tuesday for tripartite elections to vote for their local government, members of parliament, and president in a single election. A car bomb exploded in a Christian neighborhood of Nigeria's second most populous and mainly Muslim city of Kano, killing 5 people. Over 2,500 delegates, mainly business personalities from Africa and beyond, have gathered in Kigali, Rwanda, to launch the 2014 Africa Economic Outlook Report. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments and suggestions, as usual, you can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +49 160 957 59510. Thanks for listening. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time. And from Bonn, Germany, I'm Isaac Mugabe.